Hello. In a demonstration of the multi-stakeholder model at work, Mr. Shatton and I will present this together. However, I have the microphone.
I'll let John
talk. I'll start and we'll go. So I'll start and I'll pass on to Greg. So we started with, obviously, it's a change to the standard bylaw. Some of our people on our group, which was a very multi-stakeholder group, said that they would find it easier if they had an example of what that might be. So we came up with change the number of people on the nominating committee. That would be a standard bylaw change, changing the number of people on the nominating committee. So that was what we were thinking. So the first thing that has to happen is the change needs to be on the table. So it needs to be suggested, etc. Doesn't matter where it comes from. Could come from the board. Could come from anywhere. And then there would need to be a public comment. So the change comes along, and suggestion goes out to public comment, and then the public comments get considered. The board moves. Board decides to move forwards,
or not?
Yes, obviously, but let's assume it does. Moves forward, and resolves to make the change.
At that point, assuming the board then successfully resolves to amend the bylaw, the SOs and ACs could start a petition process, and the petition to oppose could be triggered by a single SO or a single AC. That's just to begin this process. At that point, all of the SOs and ACs would presumably go back and have discussions each among themselves at that point and would come back, and we would look for a threshold of support at that point of 3 SOs or ACs to continue the process. If the 3, we get that support of 3 out of 7, then we move again to the community forum with a similar discussion, SOs, ACs, other community members, general public, basically the scrum of the community. The next thing that happens after that, at this point, would be whether there's a decision to actually mount an objection. And in this case, I think we needed 4 of the 7 to agree, and we're considering at that point whether 2 objections. Two advice against would be enough to stop that. So at that point, was not complete. We didn't work through the issue of whether that essentially makes it 5 out of 7 if the 2 against are ACs as opposed to SOs. Assuming we now do have this objection, it's essentially 4, certainly 4 in support. The board would get the objection, and the board could decide to override that objection by a supermajority vote. Assuming the standard bylaw initially passed by a simple majority, the board could override by a 75% vote. If the board chose to do that, we'd move to a dispute resolution process, which we discussed briefly, which would start with some form of a mediation, collaborative attempt to bridge the gap, and if that failed, then into a more of an IRP or arbitration process, perhaps a lightweight IRP as opposed to the full mess. And then conceivably, if an IRP comes in favor of the community and the board still decides to move forward, at that point, the IRP decision would be binding and enforceable in court or by mortal combat.
Or possibly both. Just before we take questions, a couple more things that we talked about. We talked about the four agreeing to proceed, that in effect, it was a matter for each SO and AC to work out the basis upon which they came to that agreement. And we discussed the fact that we thought, generally speaking, that the CCNSO, the ASO, and the ALAC, and the SSAC, and the RSAC, and the GAC would just naturally fall into a consensus-based approach to that in their own way. They would just say, look, normally we do these things by 66% or whatever. That's what we do. In the case of the GAC, we do it by no objection. And that the biggest issue in the detail of this, and it doesn't matter what model you choose, it's an issue, is how you deal with the GNSO and whether you allow the GNSO to have to come with a half agree, half disagree, and that really is a matter for the GNSO to sort out. But one thing we got clear about was that if you take it as being 4 have to agree, then if the GNSO does have the ability to split its agree to half and half, or even a quarter, 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 it can never tip it into a petition to happen using that. If it's the fourth vote, it can't tip it over. So it's either over with everybody else, or it's over with the GNSO as one, but it's never over with the GNSO split. And that, we think, is probably a realistic price to pay for being able to split your vote in the first place. So there's that. And we also briefly discussed... abstentions are not blocking.
Are blocking. I think we came out that if you did not, that because we needed four in favor, that if there were the other three could be abstentions or votes against, they would still, or the if four were.
Now what we said was if you have four in favor and you've got three left, then it's only relevant if you allow for objections, physical objections to stop you. So the question becomes, if you actually object, then your objection is counted in the objection pile. If you abstain, it's not counted. But
right.
But your abstentions, five SOs, if the threshold is four, it's four. And that means four of them had to actively say yes.
Right.
Okay. That, now questions.
You've actually got a queue starting in the room. You've got Eric followed by Alan. And if you can use the Adobe Connect room, that will make life easier. If not, I'm sure they'll wave at you. And okay, well, you guys can manage the queue after the ones that I've just named.
Who was first?
Eric.
Sorry.
Thank you, Cheryl. Does your 4 of 7 change any if you presume that SSAC and RSAC will never take a position on something as out of their ambit as a standard bylaws change?
Well, I think if that standard bylaw change was on a security issue, the SSAC certainly might take a position. But it's an interesting question.
In your example, it was just changing one member of the DOMCOM. So
I think the short answer is we didn't consider that, but we assume that they would have a power and choose, you know, to use it or not.
I think that's right, and I think really it's very hard to start to parse up the community and say, you know, you're this, you're that. That makes me personally uncomfortable. But I understand that there might be reasons to think about doing it. But I think on this basis, if you work on the specific threshold that we've put in place, which is four, then you've got enough activity in the community to allow that to happen. In other words, I would argue that if the SSAC and the RSSAC actually blocked something, that would be a fairly significant thing to have happened, because they're only going to do it if they've got real serious issues in respect to security. So I think they should be counted as anyone else in that capacity. But I take your point. It's a good question. Who's next? Alan.
Two questions. One of them, I just walked in when you were talking about split votes, so I apologize if I missed part of it. The GNSO is not the only group that may very, very strongly want split votes. The ALAC almost surely will, and I wouldn't be surprised if maybe even the CCNSO wanted to divide it by regions or by different classes of things. It sounded like what you were saying, that since the three votes in the GNSO that are four could not throw something past the threshold, you're essentially disenfranchising their votes, or saying they're not being really, really counted. So I have a problem with that. And if other ACs, SOs decided to fracture their single voting block, we may have a real problem. So I really
I'd say
think
that's actually not a problem. At that point, that shows a lack of support in the community for the objection.
Well,
so, and I think that the fracturing, in a sense, allows different voices within each stakeholder group to note that they have an objection. The alternative is to vote only, is that each party can only vote a whole vote, and they have to decide within that group whether to vote yay or nay, or to end up in an abstention.
Okay. My question is, if all seven AC and SOs vote 80% of their votes in favor of something, does it pass?
That's not what we started. We started by saying each SO and AC can works out their vote, their agreement. We haven't said a vote. It's agree. Their agreement by whatever process they choose. I said I suspected that the DNSO were the ones who would be keen to be able to split their votes. I didn't realize that the CCNSO, I'm fairly sure, would not be uncomfortable with not splitting theirs. But anyway, it doesn't matter. In effect, the CCNSO splits them because if the CCNSO follows its existing process, it would say, in order to agree to this, we need a 66% majority of votes in the room. And that would be how it would work. So in effect, the difference would be they would agree to be generally to be bound by that 66%. So what we said was, as a starting point, if I get this wrong, stop me, that you would, each SO and AC would sort it out for themselves.
I can certainly live with that, but if you're allowing division, then I think the threshold rules may have to consider it.
Personal view is that it should be, these powers are so important, and they are so supposedly based on consensus, that you really ought to be able to do it simply in your SO and AC. And you simply ought to be able to say, we have come to consensus, this is our position. And if you can't come to consensus, tough.
And I can personally support that. I'm not sure whether all of my colleagues would. The other question is, the ESSAC specifically has made some very strong statements saying they really only want to be an advisory committee and would like to stay out of the fray of decisions which are not in a security and stability area. So you made the statement saying if the RSSAC or the ESSAC did not support a bylaw change, they were making a real statement. My reading of what they have said, and they have said it vociferously, is that that is not the case, that they are really weighing out of the game because they do not want to have an opinion on it and do not want to be considered a negative vote by nature of their not voting. Right. So I think that has to be factored in.
I think if they are structurally absenting themselves from this entire structure, then it's no longer a group of seven, and they're out of the game at that point. Right.
You do have a bit of a cue, but I think, actually, you're probably next.
Usher,
you're next, but
Usher,
you have
and then Steve.
A
Usher, Steve, and then I'll come back to you.
Okay, thank you, Cheryl. Usher Hemrajani for the record. So I have two questions. Would you allow for a petition to oppose to come up from a person or persons outside of an SO and AC, and if so, how?
We didn't discuss that because we assumed that the way that people are generally represented in what is our community is through one of the community bodies.
Okay.
So we didn't talk about it the other way.
So you assumed what you... Okay, all right. And then the second question I had was on the dispute resolution. So this is something I didn't quite catch because you were really fast, Greg. So you mentioned, so if the board overrides and 75% of the board overrides, then you go into dispute resolution and you start off with mediation. Can you elaborate on that again? Thank you.
The idea there, if the community continues to object, and perhaps we might look at whether we did not discuss whether the community needed to refresh its vote or perhaps even have a higher threshold to overcome the higher threshold that the board had, which is conceivable. We just didn't get to that, in part because we were in overtime ourselves as we discussed this part of it. But the idea, if the community continues to object, at that point there would be essentially a mediation, a cooperative, collaborative attempt to resolve the community's differences. And if the community still objected after that point in time and the board did not meet the community's needs at that point, then the community could commence an IRP to oppose that, what is now a standing bylaw.
Thank you. Three aspects quickly. One, just to follow up on what we've just talked about. The ability to move forward past to override the 75% threshold has to be higher, or else the earlier steps are meaningless because everybody will just go directly to that. So if you can meet the second stage threshold easier or equivalently to meeting the first stage threshold, then the first stage doesn't buy you anything. it's just a piece of tradecraft. Second comment along these lines that I would offer is that it's very hard to know exactly what the right formula is here. And from my point of view, just speaking personally, you fix these numbers as best you can, and you set these up, and then you have issues that come up over a period of time. This all has to be subjected in a regular fashion to the, probably through the ATRT process to look at. A different question. All of this is presented as this is future-proofing, or this is intending to replace the implied powers that NTIA has provided. Are there any worked examples that are informing opinions here of how of things that in the past might have been done differently if this system had been in place?
I think that depends on who you ask, but I can give you one example. I know that Becky would say that the change to the IRP bylaw in 2013, had it been more closely examined and subject to a process like this, would likely have ended up at the end of this with the community having enough concerns about it to object. Now, that's her opinion, and others in this room may agree, and I don't profess to know enough of the detail to be able to express my own opinion, but that is an example.
So I wasn't trying to imply that the answer was, oh, no, everything would have been the same, but I think it's helpful to have some perspective of what things. And although I will say, as you know, and everybody else I think knows, we do take bylaw changes quite seriously.
Yeah.
So there is only a little bit of delta between what has been practice over our entire history versus what we're talking about here.
Well, if nobody minds, let's just engage in that for just 30 seconds.
Yes.
Let's take the one that recently was the GAC change.
Exactly.
That one. Now, that one received a significant amount of disquiet from in the public comment.
Yeah.
Now, I can't remember, but it's not entirely impossible that there were a number of people on the board and possibly even a number of people on the staff saying we should still proceed. We didn't. We said that we feel the public comment is strong enough as that we're not going to proceed. But had we proceeded, the truth is there is nothing anyone could have done about it.
Yes. Another little loose end about all that is, since that rarely happens, but it happened in that case where the public comments were strong enough to stop it, we turned out not to have a formal process for acknowledging that we were pulling back from that process.
Precisely.
This would do that.
Exactly right.
Yeah.
That's exactly correct. Cheryl, who's next on the list? I think.
Thank you. And the list will be closed when I finish reading these names. We've got George, followed by, that's GAC Switzerland, in case there's too many Georges in the room, Renalia, Mike, Silburn, Steve, and I'm assuming it's not Steve Crocker, but another Steve, Sebastian, and we'll close off with Kavush. So,
Kavush, as usual, gets the last word. So who's first? George. One of our many Georges.
Hello, Jorge.
Okay.
Exactly. George.
Exactly, George. Yes.
For the record. I was a bit puzzled with the end of your procedure where you start this arbitration or dispute resolution, because it seems to me that a political dispute, you try to embed it into a sort of legal dispute, because what would be the standard of review by the IRP if the community board don't agree with each other? Because in the MEM, as I understood it, the standard of review would be that the board didn't follow up with a fundamental bylaw, which would oblige the board to abide by the community decision. But here it seemed to be more of a dialogue, mediation, dispute resolution, and suddenly the conflict turned into a legal conflict where the standard of review wasn't clear. And the second comment or question is, I don't see in your proposal, I guess it's also a question of time because we didn't have a lot of time. But I miss a bit the face of the community forum, because in my view that's really, really key to have a process to involve every and each SO and AC, and also people from outside the SOs and ACs. And that's really key in order to try to strive for consensus and avoid all these implications of voting, etc. Thank you.
I think to take the first point, as we looked at it, we felt that if there was a continuing objection by the community after the override, that it would first make sense to try to have a dialogue, and that's the mediation discussion or a mediated dialogue. It was the next step. If that failed to resolve the issue, then the community could decide, and we weren't by a higher threshold. To initiate an IRP. The standard of review that we discussed was it consistent with the mission, core values, and not merely a process standard, but a substantive standard as well. So it could be examined. And there may be some differences if we're talking about a member versus a non-member, but by and large the same thing. On the second point, the community forum we did specifically say would involve SOs and ACs and other community members. But essentially, you end up with maybe a sense of the room, and then the SOs and ACs would go back and decide amongst themselves whether to support the objection or not.
Exactly, and a couple other points. One is that the community forum discussion about how that's made up is a separate bigger discussion than trying to write this. Where'd he go? Oh, there he is. Trying to write it's like magic. Trying to write this process. So yes, that we need. Obviously, there needs to be detail on the community forum, but the community forum detail is relevant for any process that involves the community forum, rather than this one specifically. And secondly, yes, Greg is right about looking at whether if there is an argument, if the board is required to say our 75%, we're going ahead with our 75% majority because we believe this is in the global public interest, blah 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 blah. That's what you test. There are two things that you can test. One is that type of test in your arbitration, and the second one is if this process is in effect a fundamental bylaw, then you test that as well. You can do both. It's a matter for discussion, but you can do either of those two or both. But the key point is that you're talking about what's the basis upon which the board is saying no to the community, and that's how you test it. Who was next?
Rinalia.
Thank you. Rinalia Abdulrahim, for the record. I request that you outline the steps involving Mortal Kombat. I'm just kidding.
Would you like a demonstration? Greg and I would
be
very
nice
happy.
As well. Just a point of clarification about the threshold of 4. It's an absolute number based on total number of SOAC. I would imagine that would change if total number of SOAC would change, yes?
Yeah, we worked on the basis of 7. And on the basis we had 7, what would be a sensible number for a standard bylaw objection. Now, no one's saying that would be a sensible number for everything, and that's just a suggestion.
Next, we have Mike.
Thanks. Chris, Greg, I don't, not trying to favor our pitch in favor of yours.
But it happens to be the result of what you're going to say.
But maybe just to explain, the reason why we went where we were going, because this current process of trying to allocate votes to people when you have ACs who don't work that way,
yes.
When you have potential changes in the community and you're creating numbers around it, and that's why we tried to move away from it. But what I'm not hearing is what is the result if you manage through this convoluted number counting process to get above the threshold that you want, so then what?
Well, then that's the whole point. So I want to take that into two pieces, and then Greg will doubtless have something to say too. So just on the what is the result, if 4 SOs and ACs agree to proceed with the objection, then the objection is the decision is then communicated to the board, and that under this process, a requisite number of SOs and ACs object to the bylaw change. And the board is then put into a position where, in order to proceed with that bylaw change, it has to go to a 75% vote. And then there is a subsequent process whereby that can be challenged by the community and end up being enforced. The objection can end up being enforced.
And if they don't give it over the threshold?
Well, then there's no consensus to object. Isn't the reverse, isn't exactly the same true in your case?
No.
You just get
a fast track and a slow track.
No, if I wish to object to a bylaw change in your proposal, how can that be stopped?
It can't.
You said it could be.
No. There are two routes. There's a standard process, so you have an objection. You don't get community consensus. You go through the IRP
process.
Oh, that
still applies,
or the
that still applies to ours as well. Yes.
If you get consensus, then it goes faster.
How do you demonstrate that consensus?
In our view, very simple, which is support and not more than one objection.
How do you demonstrate support?
Anybody saying they object?
So, who can object?
You. Anyone.
So if you want to put a bylaw change up and I object to it, then what happens?
Then you've got to look for consensus. There's a consensus petition that goes to the SOs and ACs.
Yeah, and how do the SOs and ACs demonstrate that they support it?
By voting in favour.
Which is exactly the same as
sorry.
What...
Apologies.
Gotcha.
You trapped me. You got me. By
all
indicating
right.
their acceptance or agreement with the...
Which
objection.
Is precisely the words that we have used here.
No, but we don't count
agree.
Numbers. But we don't count numbers.
Okay.
People can run their own internal process how they want to do it.
Precisely what we said. Next.
Glad you two can agree. That's good. Thanks, Mark. Thanks, Chris. Sebastian,
did you want to say
what was the vote on that agreement?
Yeah, exactly.
Sebastian?
Sebastian.
Some technical difficulties. Thank you very much. I just want to come back to what Alan questioned before. I really think that it's not because we are organized in the current silos, that it's the only way to express the view of the community. And I would like to support that you take into account the fact that it's not just one ISO and one AC who votes for or against, but it must be a more granular system to take more into account of the diversity of this community. Thank you.
Thanks.
Kavush, you. Kavush.
Thank you. The agreement referred in this process does not should to be interpreted as we favor voting. We just talk of consensus, and then consensus agreement is part of the consensus. So it is not voting here. And then I was not clear whether Chris properly described. There was no agreement that abstention be taken into account, neither as objection nor as
correct.
Support. Thank you. Can
That's
you confirm
correct.
That? Thank
That's
you.
Correct. Are we done, Cheryl?
Are there any more? No? Great. Yes, you're done.
Thank
we
you.
Have one more presentation, of course. And I would like staff now to bring up the whiteboard from the remote participants huddle, I think we'll call it. I'm not sure what they decided to call themselves. The very diverse geographic locations they were working with, and ask Steve to come forward and take us through what that breakout session done under very unusual circumstances, but I trust to some extent successfully. Over to you, Steve.
I can master that. All right, so this is the remote participants group, which is really a challenge to manage with 70 to 80 varying degrees of participation and audio signal and a whiteboard facility in Adobe that randomly rearranges the location and font of everything that you type. But we managed to persevere, And we kept in mind Thomas's new requirement, our new requirement, which is to keep things really simple. The first thing we said is that the board should have an obligation and then wait 30 days before it votes on it. This is the heads up to the community. Because the board isn't obligated in today's bylaws to do a public comment on a proposed bylaws change. In my 10 years of ICANN, every one of them has gone out for public comment, but there's no obligation in the bylaws. So this is the sort of heads up. Okay, so we did four things: trigger, quorum, decision making, and outcome. The trigger is that any individual, regardless of whether they're a recognized member of the community, could begin an online petition, and they would do so within an AC or an SO. We considered whether the online petition could be done outside of an AC and SO, but very quickly we realized it had to be done within one to fit the rest of our flow. So let's suppose that James Gannon, who was one of our participants, he's in the GNSO, decided that a bylaws change was worthy of a challenge. He would begin an online petition. It would indicate the rationale for why this bylaw needed to be blocked, and that online petition would surface through GNSO. Any of the other ACs and SOs could have their own online petition with a different rationale, but it would also be to block the bylaw. And after 15 days, whatever the period would be, that AC, in this case the GNSO, would decide whether it's met its own threshold. If the threshold were met in the GNSO, let's say it was 60 different members of the GNSO, then it would take it to the next level of inviting all the ACs and SOs to participate in a community forum. Now, the petitioning AC and SO in step two would circulate its written justification for blocking the bylaw, and then ICANN staff would be asked to host a conference call. The conference call would be open to all interested participants, from all ACs and SOs or otherwise. And after the call concluded, here's the quorum, at least two ACs and SOs would have to indicate that they are sufficiently affected by the bylaw that they intend to participate in the community forum. So that's the idea of bringing together discussion and the trigger point. The second thing is decision making. So the community forum, as Jordan described yesterday morning, would be the basis for the decision making. The aim is to get consensus, so there'd be debate back and forth to try to get to consensus. And consensus in this simple model is the CCNSO style. It says there's the absence of a strong objection. There's indications of support with the absence of a strong objection. I suppose that's a little bit different than the GAC style consensus, but they're awfully similar. On the other hand, if there isn't an opportunity, though, to tweak the language to gain consensus, right? If we were actually proposing something new, as in a policy, we can often tweak the language to get to consensus. But this is a consideration of a yes-no binary decision. Are we going to block the bylaw, or are we not going to block it? It's very hard to know how one compromises on that to get to consensus. Most of the consensus discussion would center around the rationale for why we ought to block the bylaw and what we want to do instead at the next level. So at the end of the day, we said that if there was no consensus under this definition, the ACs and SOs who petitioned to pull this group together can request that we go to voting. If they go to voting, each AC and SO would have several days to come back with a decision using its own method of voting. And we said that to block the bylaw, at least to 2/3, 66% of the participating ACs and SOs would vote. That doesn't mean it's one AC and one SO, but that's 60% of the participating. And earlier we said the quorum here to get together was it have to have two, at least two ACs and SOs. Okay, finally, the outcome. If the community decided to block the bylaw, it would publish a statement explaining why, including any amendment language that it prefers that the board would use if it were to come back with a bylaw. You would have to have an ability for any AC and SO to publish a minority statement, and that could be a minority statement saying they don't agree with the blocking of the bylaw, or it could be a minority statement suggesting they don't agree with the rationale but support the decision to block it. And then after that, the bylaw would cease to become, the bylaws would revert to what they were before the board voted, and if the board went ahead and started the process over, decided to make the bylaw again, as they say on the shampoo bottle, we would rinse and repeat this whole process. So happy to take questions.
Steve, you've got a list, but I'm suspicious that Mike and Sebastian's hands are in fact old hands as opposed to new entries. Okay, yeah, I know you're an old hand, but I'm assuming then that we don't need to go to either Mike or Sebastian, but speak up if that's not the case, is that right? Okay, good. Which means we now have... And I'm still going to call you George.
Jorge. We can try. Jorge and repeat. Jorge for Cancer for the record. I think that this model has the benefit of being quite simple and straightforward, but I have doubts that the quorum and the decision-making threshold is too low, because you say only two SOs or ACs are needed to go forward. And then the majority is two-thirds of those. So in the end, well, two-thirds of two that doesn't work is two, but two-thirds of three is two. So with two SOs or ACs, you could block a decision by the board, which represents all the community. I think that's way too low.
May I respond, Jorge? I believe that for that to happen, the other ACs and SOs had to say, we don't care. Because remember, the decision not to participate affects what the threshold is. So if, in fact, only two said we even care enough to vote, that might be an indication that they care a lot and no one else cares at all. If other ACs and SOs really don't want to see this bylaw change be blocked, they simply need to participate. Because the minute you go into three, they're going to need two votes. So I guess we're really grappling with the fact that participation in these forum and voting is always optional, can't be compelled, and it's an indication that an AC or an SO feels that this is important. So we struggle with that dilemma.
If I may respond to that, I think that the board, and I'm not being sponsored by them, as a disclaimer, they intend to represent the community as a whole, the 16 of them. So it's for me, it would be a bit awkward to accept that two ACs or SOs, however engaged they are, only because the rest of the community doesn't care too much, or perhaps they are blocked inside of them, for instance, in the case of the GAC, I can imagine that very well, so that three or four countries make an agreement impossible and we couldn't participate. And that would mean that a decision by the majority of the community as represented by the board is taken down by only two SOs or ACs. That's a bit of a low threshold, and that leads me to capture a problem.
If that was the perception of the community, the board would probably put that bylaw straight back in, 30 days later vote on it, but this time around the participation would be broader. So ironically, this would be the one element of capture that would be remedied within 30 days. It's within our power to turn that around by simply weighing in to participate. No cost, no difficulty. And if it was that obvious that what's happened here frustrated the greater good as represented by the board is entirely within power to put that bylaw straight back in and overcome the objection. Next cue. And I'm looking to my 99 remote participant teammates to weigh in on the chat anytime you have something to add to this discussion.
Next up, you've got Chris, followed by Avery and Kieran, Sean, Kavush, and Alan, and I've closed the queue after Alan. Chris.
Steve, thank you. I think this is really interesting, actually. So I just want to start with the trigger, if I can. So I think having the idea that an individual, so rather than having an individual in Mike's idea come in, the individual goes to their SO and AC and gets their consensus in that. I think that's a really, really interesting idea, and obviously it could be a group of individuals, blah, blah, blah. So that's fine. So then your first step in this process is to get your SO or AC to coalesce around you. So first of all, does it have to be yours?
So could I go to the ALAC, for example, and say, as a CCTLD person, or, yes?
Yeah, we talked about that. Does it, why even have it start in an ACSO? Why can't it just be an individual?
Right.
We ended up saying the same thing that you did when you were standing up here, is that there's a home for everyone
in
the ICANN structure, and when you can't find a home, there's the ALAC. That is everyone.
The ALAC.
Seriously.
The place for homeless.
Everyone.
The place for homeless people. Excellent. Bring us your tired, your... Okay, cool. Fine, just that's cool. I mean, just a little. That's just a little sort of, you know. I asked the question because I could see there might be, you know, you might end up with a little bit of forum shopping there if, you know, if I tried to do it in my CC NSO and then, you know, I'm fine with it.
But if you did, you'd have to maintain you'd have to reach the threshold for that petition.
Correct.
So you're forum shopping, and then nobody else agrees with you in that forum, you won't succeed.
Agreed. So I'm fine with that. So we're now at the stage where we have an SO or an AC coalesced around the trigger. So they might not even necessarily agree that they want to stop it, but they might agree that they're doing it because they want a discussion. Fair enough? Okay. So why then have you then gone straight away to the community forum rather than introduce a slightly, get the SOs and ACs to do their own thing within themselves, and then have a slightly higher threshold to go to the community forum? Because
there is
a cost of the community, not money, but in time and effort and so on.
Yeah, and that's a great question. Look at the first two sentences in the quorum part. So the petitioning SOs and ACs, there may be more than one, are supposed to put in writing the justification for why we need to block this bylaw. And then we said ICANN would host a conference call, not a community forum, a conference call with all interested participants. After the call, at least two ACs and SOs would have to indicate some number of days later, yes, we care, and we're going to participate in the upcoming community forum.
Oh, so what got me was the end of the sentence in the first one, which says, if the threshold is met, all others are invited to participate in a community forum. So that's why I got confused.
Yeah, well, it should probably say phone call at the end of number one.
Right.
All others are invited to participate in an exploratory call to decide whether.
Not a problem. Okay, good. And then I think my only other comment would be I share some of the concerns of Jorge with the numbers, but in essence, you know, that's, I mean, there's a bit more detail on our chart than on yours, but they kind of sit quite closely together. And I also think that Mike's group's thoughts about having some kind of a fast track thing might be worth considering too. Thanks.
May I ask you about fast track? Because the bylaw, while the board voted to enact it, I was assuming, just on page 56 of our second draft proposal, that there's some period of time before that bylaw takes effect to allow these community mechanisms to kick in. I guess that we were assuming that.
Well, no is the answer. I mean, in effect, if the board votes to change the bylaw, the only way you can make that happen by saying in the bylaws that a bylaw change cannot take effect until X. But that isn't currently what's in the bylaws, so you'd have to put that in. That's perfectly logical. There's nothing wrong with that at all.
Thank you, Chris. Next.
Next is Avery.
Thank you, Avery speaking. I just have a clarification question with really no opinion intended, which is the question on must indicate they are affected. And I'm just trying to understand what was the intent there and what was the degree of being affected that one would have to display. Thanks.
Thanks, Aubrey. Becky Burr contributed that thought as affected being the path by which an AC or SO would decide, yes, we want to participate. But I don't think it should be a requirement. I don't think the word affected has to be the requirement. The true question is, ALAC, do you intend to participate in a community forum? CCNSO, do you intend to participate? I guess the presumption was that the degree to which that bylaws change affects them would affect that decision, but it doesn't have to.
If I may, Becky in the chat also said two things that I've noticed, that they care and self-declared, which I think is relevant to
Thanks,
what
Becky.
You were talking about.
Yeah. Thank you, Cheryl.
Your next question comes from Mr. McCarthy. Kieran.
Hello? Okay. I just wanted to sort of warn against
getting into these numbers and votes. Each time we do that, we go down a rabbit hole. In terms of like making decisions and getting stuff done and creating simple solutions to this, as soon as we start talking about when we have three, when we have four, when the GNSO gets quarter of a vote, the moment we start talking about that, we go down a rabbit hole for the next 3 hours, and absolutely no one agrees on a solution. So I do think I liked Mike's approach, which is you ask everyone, and if no one objects, it moves forward. That strikes me as a much better way of doing things than if we've got four, if we can game it here, if that person says yes. As soon as we start talking about it, we lose hours and hours and hours and never end up with a good solution anyway. So I think we should try and be a little bit more, collegial and start creating processes that just enable people to say yes or stay out the way or say no rather than think, what am I going to do with the non-commercials, et cetera, et cetera.
I will note that the rabbit hole of deciding on a method may well mean that the method will be easy to operate once it gets decided upon. And believe me, the last 10 months have been a rabbit hole on the CCWG. But the effort is to design mechanisms that once they are operationalized are easy to operate. And it turns out that very clear voting rules, thresholds, and deadlines, boy, are they easy to operate. There's not a lot of discretion and fuss about it. Hard to design, but easy to run.
So in response to that, I think when a lot of people say, especially people that haven't been involved in the process, say these plans have too much complexity, they're too complex, I think often what they're saying is code for, please stop writing in 8,000 rules about voting rights. I think that's what complexity is. Like, for example, the single member idea is a very simple idea. Where people's eyes start glazing over is when they look at the 25 pages put into how a decision's going to be made.
Right. You're right, and there were some other eyes that didn't glaze but flared at us and said, I need more detail before I can consider and approve this proposal. Sometimes we're just trapped between two lovers right here.
Yes. Something says eat me and something says drink me, and we are definitely in Alice in Wonderland world. The next is Cavus. Allied by Alan, and I am feeling extraordinarily generous for a tiny intervention by Mr. Despain.
Hello, the next is Sean, right?
Oh, where are you? My apologies, Sean. I looked over there and totally ignored you. It's not my intention. It was just my aging eyes. Sean, over to you.
All right, thank you. This is Sean for the record. I just want to get a clarification on the timing thing. Can I assume that the start of this process assumes that the current process of changing bylaw will have been done? That is when you said board must announce its plans. Does it mean that it's still kind of public commenting, or that it has gone through the normal process of the public comment and then it has is about to implement the change based on the outcome of the public comment?
The bylaws do not require that the board give advance notice or public comment before it votes on a bylaw. It can do a bylaws change with a two-thirds vote anytime it wants to. That's not the way the current board operates. They put it out for public comment. And Becky said that one idea here is a bylaws change to give a heads-up, an advance notice. And if it requires that the board give 30-day notice before it intends to vote on a bylaws change, that is an opportunity to begin to assemble community opinion, and let the board know what we think, whether or not there is a public comment period or not. It's an advance notice requirement so that we can let the board know whether there is concern about a bylaws change.
Sorry, just one more thing. I'm just concerned about the 30 days. What if there is a need to actually change a bylaw, have a change done immediately? Does that give that into consideration?
Yes, it would say that the board couldn't make a bylaws change any sooner than 30 days from when it thought it needed one. Chris? Chris is saying he can't imagine needing it any quicker than that. Okay, thank you.
Apologies to you, Sean. I do try and watch the list properly. Kavush.
Yes, the quorum that you have mentioned in number two is useful but may not be necessary. However, if you maintain that quorum, you need to also, under the decision-making, refer to the quorum for decision-making. Usually, in all international decision-making, quorum is referred for decision-making. That if there are 100 people registered, should be a minimum number participating in the discussion in order that the decision should have a legal value. So your quorum number two should be accompanied with another quorum under the decision-making. And having said that, I'm happy in the decision-making you refer to consensus. That is a good and positive step.
Thank you, Gabus.
Next up is Alan.
Thank you. I have a worry in a lot of these things about setting up rules that the established community will block other entities from coming in. If you look at a decision to admit a new AC or SO, that may be one that the others simply we don't want to dilute our power. If you take one that is an ALAC favorite, that we have one board member right now. There are some in ALAC who, and at large, who believe there should be two, but the other SOs may well decide, no, we don't want to dilute our power. We're going to block it, and there's no way to fix that. And overall problems. I mean, we've seen similar problems within the GNSO, new constituencies, and the established groups often say we don't want to be diluted. And I think we really need to make sure that we're not locking ourselves into our current structure because of that. Thank you.
Yeah, that would necessitate, and low threshold, that would necessitate finding an ally to say they care, they agree with your concern, and they're going to participate and stand in the way of achieving a two-thirds vote to block the bylaw. That's good old-fashioned politics, but it may not be what you had in mind here.
Chris, back to you.
Gosh. I've got so many places I could go with that. I was going to ask how, and I meant to say this before, so thank you, Cheryl, for allowing me to do this. On number three, Steve, to block a bylaw, at least 66% of participating ACs and SOs must vote. So each AC and SO decides its vote using its own methods. So I don't know what that means. Are we saying that they actually can vote? And are they voting as an AC or an SO? Or are they voting in bits? Or what were you intending?
It's binary.
Right.
And each makes its own decision to say yes or no.
Right. Okay, cool. So just so that we were...
And yesterday we had a great discussion, I thought, of binary versus split.
Yeah.
And I see the real merits of split for a lot of things in GNSO.
Yeah.
Here we wanted to keep it simple.
Binary. And I can't resist just pushing back a little bit and saying, so... Under this model, I just want to make sure I'm clear. Alan's right. The change of the ALAC's board members from one to two could be blocked by how many other? By 66% of everyone, or 66% of those who participate.
The latter.
Right. So the SAC, make some assumptions here. The SAC and the RSAC. Let's assume we would, as we said, won't, so that's fine. So now we have ASO, GNSO, CCNSO, ALAC, and GAC.
That's right.
Okay. All right. So 66% of those would need to be against that change. Okay. Thanks. I understand it.
Thank you, Chris. Cheryl, anything else?
Unless there's somebody on the list that I haven't seen. Thank you very much. And I just wanted to make a simple observation, and that is, I think the dynamics of getting each of your groups as diverse as possible was a very good one, and I'm delighted that we went through this exercise. I hope that we get a little bit more time, and I haven't managed to press the send button and ask the chairs. They've now got half a sentence in front of them, which was... Our timing for lunch would mean that right now we are some 7 minutes later than we should be to leave the room. So I think we should probably wrap up the Q&A specific part now. And if I had my way, and you can overrule this suggestion by all means, we would encourage conversation over lunch and then come back to do a little tiny wrap up and see what we've got from this activity. And that would mean we get back here at...
our advertised time so the remote participants know what's going on, and that they can, you know, then contribute in an equitable way as well. That's what I would have finished if I'd had time in that sentence.
Thanks, Cheryl, for gently pressuring us in your direction. But as always, what you said makes an awful lot of sense, and it is, in fact, very close to, if not identical, to what Leon and I would suggest to the group. Let me say that this has been very remarkable. You know, you've come up in almost no time with great ideas, and we think that these need to be fleshed out just a little bit more. And I think that, Cheryl, you know, when we met this morning for breakfast, I suggested we have this breakout thing, and Cheryl made some suggestions how I should do it, and I said, well, Cheryl, you better do it. And she did, and she did great. So a round of applause for Cheryl as well. So if you have two or three questions on understanding the concepts, I think we should take them now. Let's not do value judgments on them, but what we suggest doing is ask the rapporteurs that presented the proposals to huddle over lunch and maybe consolidate that into one proposal that we bring in front of the group afterwards and hopefully can agree on. How does that sound? For the remote participants, there's a lot of nodding in the room, which is a good sign. So do we have any questions in the room? Those are... Jonathan.
Chris and Kieran's hands are old hands, I believe.
Sorry, this is just a question about process. The rapporteurs get together and create a combined proposal.
If they can. They can.
I'm wondering if it makes more sense for their objective to be to identify the distinctions and boil it down to a set of questions that then get discussed about it. Because there'd only be two or three, but, I mean, that might be a more productive thing than them trying to come up with the hybrid proposal themselves.
Yeah, I think that's a good approach. I mean, what we are trying to do here, I think, is to have a clear picture of what we do agree on, and just then the three or two questions or one question that we need to answer, and so we can narrow down, so we can deliver, of course, a broader agreement later on the day. So yeah, I think both parts could be important.
Maybe even where there's points of disagreement, assign one of them to each make a case for what their group, so that the, one of them is a quorum, right? So our group that Mike represented didn't have a quorum requirement, the others did. So maybe the two people need to come up and make a case for those two possibilities for the group.
So Jonathan's sees me smiling and probably is expecting what's happening now. How about you facilitating the group amongst the rapporteurs? So you have a new job. Just to make sure that we get exactly the outcome that you want to have. You know, we want to make everyone happy. And so I think we can even break for lunch early. There don't seem to be any questions. Earlier than, I said we can have two or three questions, and, you know. So the GAC wants to stand between the group and lunch. Thomas Schneider, please.
Yes, I would like to make a quick statement. It will not take more than 15 minutes. You find it also on the GAC website. It's about the weather in California. No, I just wanted to ask a question. I failed to see the issue of the stress test in today's agenda, so that we know that we can prepare, because I think it may be useful to also try and identify common ground to a possible way forward on this one. When will that be tabled this afternoon? I hope it will, actually. Thank
you. Yes, you can expect that to happen. We wanted to see how things are going this morning. Let's come up with a revised agenda and a proposal with an exact time after the lunch break. Okay? Thanks, everyone. See you again after lunch.